But the idea to leap into performing instrumental music was really part of that big accident where I started to get reviews for some avant-garde guitar music I was putting out on my own label. And eventually Relativity said, well, are you gonna tour? And I said, you know, guess what? I've never done this in front of an audience before. To tell you the truth, it was great. I mean, it sure beats obscurity and poverty. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't complain for a second about that, because suddenly people were playing my music on the radio. You know, guys like yourself were sort of pioneering the record for people out there, and that's really the goal, is to get people to hear your stuff. We just love to play, you know. I love playing, I love writing, I like making records. And I try to take advantage of every opportunity that comes my way. You know, no matter who it is, what it is, where it is, you know, if it seems interesting to me, then I'll jump on it. Hi, this is Joe Satriani with Redbeard.
You can probably count the hit guitar instrumentals in rock and roll on both hands with fingers left over. There was Wipeout and Walk Don't Run and Telstar, Frankenstein and Hocus Pocus. But after about 1980, unless it was an occasional TV show theme, the guitar instrumental in the rock world was strictly passé, relegated to a status alongside novelty songs. All of that, though, changed in 1987 when an unknown, quiet-spoken guitar player and composer named Joe Satriani released his second full-length instrumental album called Surfing with the Alien on a small independent label. The multi-million sales of this all-instrumental album effectively closed the time in contemporary music where the rock guitarist had become self-consciously cliched, supplanted for the first time in rock history by the versatile electronic keyboards. Joe Satriani's Surfing with the Alien album didn't merely open the door for the reemergence of rock guitar, it kicked the door down, and he did it without hype or money. Let's talk about true alternative, and let's talk about true indie credibility. Your first album, 1985?
Yeah, probably 84, the Joe Satriani EP on Rubina Records,
right.
Yeah.
Now, who is Rubina Records? And let's talk about indie cred.
I'm not only a client, I'm also the president of the company. Yes, my wife Rubina is the vice president, or was the vice president of the company before we fired each other. I just started a record company in my living room in Berkeley, California, just as a way to release this avant-garde EP of guitar tunes. And it was a really good learning experience from a business side, because, you know, I thought, well, you know, I know how to make weird noises on the guitar and write really strange songs, but how do you sell it to, a bunch of record stores around town, and right. How do you get it in the hands of journalists and all that kind of stuff? So I bought a book, believe it or not, by Nola Press about how to start your own business, and I just did it page by page and started a record company, a publishing company, and figured out a way to press some records up, and that's really where it started. And it was completely alternative. That's about as alternative as you can get.
We'll be right back.
Joe Satriani with the title song to 1987 Surfing with the Alien.
Grew up on Long Island, a small town called Westbury, although I did go to school in Carr Place, and that's where I got in most of my trouble and had most of my crazy experiences growing up. So,
How old are you? What years are we talking now?
Oh, I was born
so
in 56.
You're like my age, okay. Were you playing guitar as early as high school?
I started playing guitar the day Hendrix died. That's when I decided I'd be a guitar player. Before then, I had been a drummer for about 3 years, but a sort of a casual drummer, not a musician type guy. Just I rode motorbikes and hung out and did nothing and played drums with about the same amount of enthusiasm. But when Hendrix died, I quit the football team and decided to be a guitar player.
Where were you, and how did you get the news that Jimi Hendrix had died?
I was all suited up in my football gear, which, looking at me now, you're probably thinking that's a pretty funny
sight. I see tailback.
I was a tight end. And
yeah, small team.
There you go.
What was the record that year, you think? Do you remember?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
It was the beginning of the season, so. Right. So there I was. I was right outside the gym door and getting ready to practice, and a teammate had come out and said that he had been home during lunch break, heard on the news that this guitar player, Hendrix, had died. And, just like that, I changed my mind about a lot of things, just like reality. Went through a big switch right there. Took my equipment off and went home and played my Hendrix records and decided then I was going to be a guitar player, and I haven't changed my mind ever since.
amazing fretwork from Joe Satriani on the song Ice Nine. Joe continues the Cinderella story of
the force behind those original Guitar Heroes included not only technique and a whole new sound, a whole new attitude, but a lot of compositions that have lasted years and years. Recently, more of the fantastic guitar players that have come along are not caught up in that sort of revolutionary, radical new approach to songwriting. You know, when Hendrix and Clapton and Beck and those guys came along, as well as Jimmy Page, they brought with them a whole new attitude, and it was almost tied in with a social movement.
Inextricably.
Yeah, so... And
there
was
something happening here, to quote Stephen in Buffalo Springfield. Absolutely.
Yeah. And a lot of in the 80s, it's mainly been a guy with a guitar just playing really well. There hasn't been any big upheaval, no real social movement.
Do you remember the first guitar you ever owned?
Oh, yeah. My sister Carol bought me a Hagstrom 3 at Matthews Music, which is located in Roosevelt Field on Long Island.
How much did something like that go back then?
That was $126.
Nice investment. Way to go, Carol.
Yes, thanks, Carol. It was her first paycheck as an art teacher.
As a what?
Art teacher.
And she took her first paycheck,
which is
a big moment in anybody's life, and spent it on her, younger brother?
Oh, yes. She's 9 years older than I am.
She's cool. She'll get front row seats.
That's right. Yeah, well, everyone, I'm the youngest of five kids, and I have three sisters and a brother, and along with my parents, I always got a lot of support to do whatever I wanted to do when it came to music. So whether it was playing the piano, the drums, or the guitar, they would make sure that they didn't stop me from doing anything, and when need be, they would give me a little push if they thought I was getting a little lazy or discouraged.
That's nice.
So that's very lucky.
Good. Yeah, you were. You're very, very fortunate. Conventional lessons or self-taught?
I tried. I really did try it. I went to one guy, and he taught me Jingle Bells. And the second week I went back, the first week I left off Purple Haze, and I said, could you teach me how to do Purple Haze? And he said, oh yeah, sure, but learn this out of this book first. So I came back, I had Jingle Bells down, and he had neglected to really learn Purple Haze, so he said, well, it goes something like this. And what he played was something so terrible that I was, you know, I just...
No, that ain't it.
I picked up the record and I left. I never went back. And so I basically learned from playing along with records. I had... you know, I was really fortunate. My older sisters and my brother, they had lots of records, and the house was always alive with music. So I had records to play with that reflected jazz from my parents' era all the way up to soul music that they started getting into in the 60s. So from Lester Young to James Brown, and... that's how I got into Wes Montgomery, listening to my mom's collection. And we had all the Motown stuff, all the British Invasion stuff, all the American rock and roll. We had, you know, Bob Dylan through to John Mayall, all the Hendrix stuff. Everything
wonderful.
Was there. Everything
That's
was
wonderful.
There. Yeah. Really, the credit goes to my mother. She was really a Wes Montgomery fan, and... she had just about every Wes Montgomery record that there was. Mm. And so I was very familiar with it, and I started assimilating some of his techniques in a very natural way. And then I started to notice that Hendrix used to put some of that into it. And my mother used to pick that up too, you know. She'd say, oh, that sounds a little bit like... Wes Montgomery, doesn't it, you know?
Can you be specific? What Jimmy songs that everybody has heard of do you feel are obvious examples of influences from Wes Montgomery?
The biggest is the Woodstock Jam. That would be the number one.
I also think Wind Cries Mary's got Wes written
over,
right?
That's got that whole...
What is that?
That's a sort
of... that don't play...
I never really had a good word for that, and I hesitate to use the word I know because I hope it's not derogatory, but what came to me as being the Chitlin' Circuit sound. Growing up on Long Island, that's what they called it.
It was a very black jazz kind of blues at the same time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I didn't know where it came. I mean, it was foreign for a little white kid from Long Island. I had no idea where it was coming from. I just assumed it arrived from outer space and got into Hendrix's
brain. They don't
serve
Chianti with chitlins, do they?
No. So, but yeah, you're right there, Wind Cries Mary, but the octaves, I think it's almost a tribute to Wes Montgomery as the Woodstock Jam. And Wes Montgomery died, I think it was 68, so I'm sure that was in Hendrix's mind, you know.
Joe Satriani playing Circles around the competition from his double platinum trendsetter, Surfing with the Alien from 1987. Next, you'll hear the impressive list of students who studied under guitar teacher Joe Satriani. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and hear a lot more at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Joe Satriani, Surfing with the Alien.
Hi, this is Joe Satriani with Redbeard.
Thanks, Joe. In between stints with the Greg Kinn Band and as Mick Jagger's featured tour guitarist, Joe Satriani supplemented his income by giving guitar lessons. I remember when you and I first met and we did our first interview, gosh, years ago, on that remarkable second album of yours, Surfing with the Alien. You taught me something then that I don't know is that well known now, and that is, I mean, for some like 15 years, you, Joe Satriani, were a guitar teacher before you made this commitment to be a performer.
I like doing things in reverse. I mean, that's something I do a lot.
First of all, let me ask you about the attraction of teaching. What was it that you found fulfilling approaching the guitar as a teacher, in an academic sense, really.
The reason why teaching was natural to me was because my mom was a teacher.
Oh.
My two older sisters were teachers, and there was just a lot of stuff hanging around the house, teaching materials, and it seemed like an easy thing to do. And I had taken lessons as early as 9 years old, music lessons on the drums for a couple of years. So it didn't seem like a bad idea to make string money, you know, while you're trying to practice guitar. And, you know, I was just in a string of bands from when I was 14 up until, I guess, about 30 years of age, playing in lots of rock and roll bands until I signed up with Relativity Records. But the idea to leap into performing instrumental music was really part of that big accident where I started to get reviews for some avant-garde guitar music I was putting out on my own label. And eventually Relativity said, well, are you going to tour? And I said, you know, guess what? I've never done this in front of an audience before.
Were they surprised?
Yeah.
I bet they were.
They thought I just did this every day. And I said, well, I've never done it in my life.
It would be an assumption that one would make, sure.
Yeah. But actually, I was in rock and roll bands with singers. That's what I did for most of my career. I mean, performing has always come naturally to me. I mean, I really like it. I get off on it. And it is the final step, the culmination, I think, of the musical experience. Because you experience it, you know, when you get the inspiration to write some music and you watch yourself play it and you think, well, now I got to share this with somebody. They got to check it out. And so when you finally get to do it night after night, it's really great.
Drive Rock from Joe Satriani's album Surfing with the Alien. That's called the Satch Boogie. I've got to ask you, you're a very modest man, but I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
Name some of the most famous guitar players who we would know, mm-hmm. Who you instructed, who you taught to play guitar at some point.
Yeah, Kirk Hammett from Metallica took
Kirk Hammett from Metallica took lessons from Joe Satriani.
That's right. And Larry Lalonde from Primus. Steve Vai from Steve Vai and Whitesnake and a bunch of other things. Frank Zappa.
Right.
Alex Skolnick from Testament. Dave Bryson from Counting Crows. Doug Doppler from Doug Doppled.
That is remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's see, who else? I'm thinking about, what's Charlie's last name? I'm forgetting his name.
Charlie Hunter.
The jazz, seven string jazz guitar player.
Wow. Got to cause kind of a zen smile to go across your face when you see these people doing the work that they're doing out there in the marketplace now. When you see them selling records, you see them getting Grammy awards. When you see them the case of Metallica, just selling gazillions albums and things like that.
You know? Especially when you know them, I know firsthand that Kirk is a really dedicated guitar player. He's a lover of music and guitar music. He's got great taste in guitar players. He always brought in impeccable stuff by other players to find out what was going on, how was it being done. And he had no problem gathering information in a general way and saying, and being comfortable saying, okay, I'll take this home and I'll figure out what to do with it, because that's really the way I like to do it, give people choices and let them decide on their own how to apply it to their musical situation. And he's always had his own vision. He's always driven. And it shows.
Thank you.
The exquisite Always With Me, Always With You comes from the 1987 album Surfing With The Alien by Joe Satriani. Next, Joe reveals how it felt to be suddenly in the white-hot glare of the spotlight. For this and more of your favorite interviews, check out inthestudio.net and follow In The Studio on Facebook. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Joe Satriani.
Hi, this is Joe Satriani with Redbeard.
Thanks again, buddy. Satriani's reputation soared as Surfing sold 1 million copies, then 2 million. His picture was on countless music magazine covers, and Joe won a string of guitar readers' polls. So how comfortable was it for this soft-spoken, mild-mannered 31-year-old?
Well, to tell you the truth, it was great. I mean, it sure beats obscurity and poverty. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't complain for a second about that, because suddenly people were playing my music on the radio. You know, guys like yourself were sort of pioneering the record for people out there, and that's really the goal, is to get people to hear your stuff, you know. And
so there wasn't any, I got the feeling, and of course you straightened me out, I got the feeling though that there's the rock and roll pop music world, and then there's a subset, and it's the guitar gunslinger, that it's very competitive in that area.
Didn't bother me, and I would think that the main reason would be is that I had students leading up to the release of that. I was still teaching. I think Kirk Hammett was the last lesson I gave in the early 88, and by then Surfing had just started to take off. And I had a lot of experience sitting down across from students who I thought would definitely go farther than me. I mean, they had better hands.
And, honestly?
Honestly, absolutely. And I learned that lesson when I was teaching Steve Vai when he was 12 years old. I went, wow, you know, and I was just a year ahead of him, really, in playing. I just started playing myself. But that year, you know, allowed me to be a decent teacher for him, just to show him the things that he needed to know to start out. But after about a year and a half, 2 years, we were like comrades. We were on the same mission. And it was obvious to see the talents that he had and the strengths that he had. And it was great to see it. And you know, I got in my head that, well, there's going to be a lot of people who can play me under the table. And so for me, it was always writing songs, writing great compositions, trying to be as good as all the best that I enjoyed listening to.
I'm so glad you went there, because that's something else I wanted to talk to you about. You're a composer. You've got to be.
Yeah, you have to be to survive. Yeah, you can, you know, maybe you can get one record out just on, let's say, some unusual finger technique,
right,
or sound or a pedal, whatever. But
right,
after that, you know, a lot of musicians come and go that use that as the formula for their success.
And they,
you know,
do get pigeonholed or painted into a corner,
yeah,
because
they do
of that. Yeah,
I wouldn't see how they would get off on playing their acts if that's the way that they did it every day, you know, relied on a sound or a flashy technique, you know, whether it's speed or something unusual. For me, the greatest thing is writing the song and then following it through to its conclusion, which is performing it, like right here in the studio or in front of a live audience at a theater somewhere. To me, that's a great journey, and I just try to do that over and over as much as I can.
The plaintive cries of six steel strings stretched over wood in the hands of Joe Satriani on Surfing with the Alien. In the 90s, Joe would organize several of his contemporaries who had all benefited from Joe's pioneering success.
And you're playing with a trio here that goes back to, with Jeff, the late 70s.
Yes,
how do you keep it fresh? Where do you find the inspiration? How do you get the sparks to fly?
I'll tell you, one thing that really worked for us as a trio was the G3 tour. We started in 96 as a trio.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but would you explain to folks what the G3 tour, what that
sure,
was
yeah.
or is?
Well, I came up with this idea to go out on tour with some really scary guitar players I thought, you know, would really give me a kick in the rear end every night. And so we went out with Steve Vai and Eric Johnson, and we did a show where Steve would do a set with his band. Eric did a set with his band. Stu, Jeff, and I would come out. We'd do our set. Then we'd invite the other guitar players on at the end of the night and have a big jam. And we did that for about a year and a half in the U.S. and Europe. We just love to play, you know. I love playing. I love writing. I like making records. And so I try to take advantage of every opportunity that comes my way. You know, no matter who it is, what it is, where it is, you know, if it seems interesting to me, then I'll jump on it.
How long have you and Jeff and Stu been playing together?
Jeff and I have been playing since 1979.
Jeez.
And, yeah, I joined up with Stu in 87.
Well, so Jeff, you basically can't commit, can you?
No, I'm still undecided.
I'm Red Beard. We're live, and what a thrill! We have Joe Satriani along with Jeff Campitelli on drums and Stuart Hamm on bass to perform live with Joe. And we're gonna turn let the horses out of the barnyard. What are you gonna play for us first, Joe?
We got a song called Ceremony. We'll be right back.
It's wonderful. Now hold on, Jeff. Don't leave. I want to make sure everybody gets identified here. Of course, that was Stuart Hamm on the bass, Jeff Campitelli on the drums, and Joe Satriani playing guitar. And Jeff, nobody's gonna believe that was live. I mean, it just sounds like it's right off of the Crystal Planet CD. So give me a rim shot just to let them know that you're really. I mean, this is the way it's done. Nice job, boy. That sounds great. I'm Redbeard. Back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio thanking the nicest guy in rock, Joe Satriani. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions of All Rights Reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by another great guitarist, Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and get a lot more at inthestudio.net.